morning. Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate you all to tuning in to the live show. Today is Sunday, February 11th, 2018. I'm Scott Lohman. Here today are Greg Layden and Lynette Gillenblad, and we're going to be talking about religion and climate change. So be sure to stay tuned for the American Atheist Viewpoint in the fourth segment of the hour. We welcome listener interaction during the live show with your phone calls to 952-946-6205 or your emails to radio@mnatheists.org. The views of the interviewers and guests are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of Minnesota Atheists. The topic of climate change is important, and we can see the change going on daily. Lynette Gillenblad has noticed that the religious community is not talking about the topic that much, and this is cause for concern. She and Greg Layden will discuss the importance of talking about this issue. You can find links and program archives on the Minnesota Atheist website. Greg Layden and Lynette Gillenblad, welcome to Atheist Talk.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me. Boy, you know, you have to be careful. If you call into this show, you'll end up being on it. And that's what happened to me.
There you go.
I was like, well, no, I'm here. Okay. But it's great to be here. So I think when I originally called, I was calling in. You guys were talking about a different subject. So sometimes I call into this show and I don't know. I'm in a different world. But Hertzie said, hey, let's do a show. So I was calling in. I don't remember what your original topic was, but that I am very concerned. I'm not necessarily an atheist myself. I like to be open to all things. And I just don't like when people like dominate other people with their beliefs that are hurting people. And it seems like it's more the Christian right that has this, there's a dominion factor to it where they don't, I heard Jerry Falwell say years ago that he was bragging about driving this big SUV and he was wasting as much gas as he could because it seems like making the liberals mad is more important to a certain sect of Christians. And that upsets me because it seems like, really? So Earth here is just to be destroyed because you're going to leave and go to heaven? And is that really what some Christians think? So when I heard that, that's what I was thinking of. But not all Christians think that way, but there are a percentage that do, and I'm sure you can all think of people that you know that might think that way. So anyway, that was why I...
Well, I think that lines up with a very common motivation for science deniers generally. That Christian or not, other than the religious aspect of it, I call it hippie punching. It is, you get a certain amount of pleasure out of just attacking the environmental movement. And there's an element to that I have just been talking recently with colleagues about, the polarization accusation. You know, the idea that when Al Gore lost to George Bush and he went into more environmental, direct environmental activism, people will tell you now, Al Gore was a polarizing figure. Al Gore polarized us. Al Gore is why there's a difference between people who say climate change is a hoax versus that the science is real. And people, the thing about this is we can have these conversations in a Sunday morning in a radio show, but there are actually lots of scholars who study these things. And I know of a couple of peer-reviewed papers that asked the question, did Al Gore polarize the politics? And the answer is, according to the peer-reviewed research, no, he didn't. It's just that people say he did. But by saying he did, that's part of identifying the environmental movement and environmentalists and into this category that you just go out and denigrate because it makes some people like you when you do that. And that's what these religious leaders are doing. It's similar to what non-religious people or people who aren't religious leaders but who are anti-climate change deniers are actually doing something really similar. So that's a thing you've identified as real, I think, very real.
And like when I was married, my husband had his two daughters. I remember they were having an argument in the back seat and one of them called the other one a tree hugger. Right. Like that was an insult. And I said, why, what does that mean? She goes, I don't know. But she heard her mom, who happened to be a Christian. And again, not all Christians are like this, but her mom was kind of like one of those dominionists where, you know, environment doesn't matter, you know. And so she didn't really know what she was saying, but she heard it and she knew it was a negative slur. And it's like, I just thought that was sad. It was like, because her sister was writing a paper for her school, you know, on environmental something. And so that was her opportunity to make her feel bad or something because she liked trees.
Yeah. Well, one of my formative experiences as a person who became an environmental advocate is exactly relates to this. I was a kid learning about the environment. I knew that I could see around me that the environment was being built over. I lived in a place that didn't have suburbs. It was a city. And you walk out a few blocks out of the city and you're in the country.
Yeah.
And this countryside was starting to get developed into suburbs.
Yeah.
And I remember when the first shopping mall was built in our area. We didn't have one before, then we had one and so on. And I remember thinking, and we used to go camping. We spent June.
Where was that, can I ask?
Up Albany, New York.
In Albany, New York.
Yeah, so I lived near Graceland Cemetery. So we could walk past the cemetery and we were suddenly in Norman's, you know, in the countryside. And we would go from June until, I would take off, I would leave school a week early and come to, back to school a week late. And in between, we'd be camping the entire time. So I had this real strong sense of the environments being built over at the time.
Yeah.
Earth Day happened back in those days. And I remember as a kid saying something. My uncle, who was a missionary, Franciscan missionary in Costa Rica, and he had come back to visit. And I remember saying something about the forests being cut. And they're being, you know, and we are damaging the environment. And he actually physically attacked me, like he hurt me, and like he spanked me, and that kind of stuff.
So how old were you?
I don't remember how old I was, but I was probably about 7. And he basically said, God put those things on this planet for man to use.
Okay.
What you are saying here is blasphemy. This is a priest.
Yeah.
I mean, he was great. I love my uncle. He did all kinds of cool stuff. He was a ham radio operator. He'd invent stuff.
Yeah.
I loved him coming around. But all of a sudden, he was this monster attacking me because I was saying that we wanted to save stuff. And his position was God put these things on this planet for us, for man to use and exploit.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, I have a – because I was an altar boy. You know, I was a Christian. I was a Catholic. We went to church every – you know.
Yeah.
I remember a kid across the street from me telling me, one day you're going to realize that religion is bogus and you're going to stop being a Catholic. And I physically wanted to hurt him for saying that.
Yeah.
You know, as like a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old. And so this is, but my transformation was to becoming ultimately an atheist involved the way that Christianity, in particular Catholicism, viewed the environment as something that we needed to exploit. And I just knew when I heard that, that's the first thing that I heard that told me that this was all wrong.
One thing that gives me hope. Oh, I'm sorry. He's going to.
Nope.
I was going to say the Pope now is coming out, you know, for the environment. So sure. I thought that was a good thing. But then on the other hand, I mean, the Catholic religion also told everybody to be fruitful and multiply and have as many kids as you possibly can and populate everything. So that's a factor, too, that I'm not sure the Pope is looking at. But I do appreciate that, you know, he is talking about it in a positive way.
Yeah, as popes go, this one's better than
In some areas, so yeah.
No, he's got a long way to go still. So, I don't know. Do we have a break coming up? I'm just looking at you.
No, we've got about 4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes. Okay. Yep. Yay. So, that's what I was looking up a lot of different things. And, you know, Hertzi said, you want to be on the show? So I was like, oh my gosh, I got to find knowledge and things. But I was hopeful that, you know, I was very encouraged by the message that he's sending. But on the other hand, I mean, I grew up with Catholic relatives bragging about how many kids they each had. And then they'd complain about not going to, like, the state fair because there was too many people there. And I'd be like, don't they make the connection? You have 10 kids at home, and half those kids probably at the fair are yours, and the other half are your grandkids. So, I mean, as far as the being Catholic, I can relate to that. I wasn't raised Catholic. All the guilt and shame was there. Because my grandfather was kind of excommunicated from the church for being divorced at the time. So anyway. Is there a break coming up yet? I keep looking at you.
keep talking away. I will jump in when we need to on that. So, you know, it's interesting because I tend to was reading on one of my blog that I read. Being a watcher of the religious right in this area, because there's two big stations that run a lot of stuff, and I will listen to stuff, and they still ridicule the concept of climate change on that. They call it this big hoax that somebody's making money off of, and I keep going,
yeah, how?
How is always the question on that part.
Yeah.
So the challenge there is to educate people on the science of what's going on. And you know, Greg, this is something you're doing, and that's a huge challenge.
Part of it also is, you're absolutely right, and education is the magic bullet. And that's why there's been such a huge effort made by anti-science people to claim that making scientific claims is itself political. So therefore, you can't – I mean, I was at our precinct caucuses. I won't say which party because we're not supposed to do anything like that in this show. But I was at a high school, and I said to the students, how come you don't have a party club in your school? And they said – I don't want you to mention the name of your party.
Oh.
But and they said, we can't. We're not allowed in the school to have any political groups. Meanwhile, there's another group that was interested in a different high school of forming that was an environmental group.
Yeah.
And they were viewed by one of our local high schools as being too political to do, to have. So environmental groups are political groups, according to the high schools sometimes. Some high schools in this area have environmental groups and they encourage it and they're big time. Other high schools, we don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. And I understand why the administrators don't want to, because if they have an environmental group, an anti-environmental group will then form.
Oh, okay.
And they don't want that. So in other words, our, even at the high school level, bringing in climate change into your classroom today is a little bit like bringing in evolution, which you're supposed to do in your classroom,
yeah,
say 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
It's seen by some people as a political move, even though it's not. So mm-hmm. by politicizing concern over climate change, it now is something that you can exclude from certain conversations in the educational framework and not expose kids to.
Yeah, it's because they don't like the political implications of what the science is telling us. Then they seem to get scared by that concept of, well, if this is true, then this little belief we have over here must unfortunately become complete nonsense. And a lot of people can't look that thing straight in the eye.
Right.
Yeah. So that's – well, actually, when you guys had interviewed Paul Douglas, that's what was, I called in to ask him about was, you know, why is this such a political football? And, of course, he was bringing up, well, you know, the oil companies and profit. And
they're paying for it.
You know, I just don't see why that's not obvious to people and very frustrating to me. So.
Yeah. And there are movements in there in religion on that, and we can bring that up when we come back because we're coming up on our first break. So you're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So please stay with us through the break, and we'll be back.
Robert Burrill here. Looking to add some comedy to your Saturday nights? Tune in to Laughing Matters right here on AM 950 at 7 p.m. to join myself, along with the funniest comedians in the Twin Cities, for an hour of topical social commentary and blatant self-promotion. Laughing Matters is brought to you by Stand Up Records, the recording label of the best comedians in the country, from Doug Stanhope to Hannibal Buress. Visit them online at www.standupcrap.com.
And the first sentence of his email said, "I'd like to stay anonymous." And the second sentence said, "I'd like to donate $1 million to the Global Good Fund. Where should I send the check?"
I'm Tony Lloyd, and I'm the host of the brand new show, Social Entrepreneur. If you love stories that engage, inform, and inspire, you don't want to miss it. Join us every Monday from 7 to 8 a.m. right here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
This is Ken Hagland of Minnesota Hospice, inviting you to listen to our brand new show airing on AM 950 on Saturdays from noon to 1. The Minnesota Hospice Show looks forward to discussing how we honor life and to exploring the physical, spiritual, mental, and emotional issues we experience throughout all stages of life. Learn how hospice is the new face of hope and how it's your benefit, your choice. Join us Saturdays at noon and check us out online at minnesotahospice.com.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe, and I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and Francine Dinah. If you've never been to Cucumbers, it's a buffet-style restaurant with a huge variety of salads, homemade soups, bakery items, and hot entrees that change daily and nightly, plus our always fresh fruit and delicious ice cream. We're open for lunch and dinner, but Sunday brunch is my favorite time at Cucumbers. With scrambled eggs, waffles, French toast, bacon, sausage, baked ham, chicken fajitas, brunch potatoes, warm gooey cinnamon rolls, and many other items to choose from, it's no wonder why Cucumbers has always been a popular Sunday destination. So whether you're looking to skip Mass, someplace to go after Mass, or just great food to maintain your Mass, Cucumbers is the answer to your prayers. Bring in your church bulletin or Minnesota Atheist newsletter and receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Scott Lohman. If you have a comment or a question, please call us at 952-946-6205 or send an email to radio at mnatheist.org. Greg and Lynette, welcome back to Atheist Talk.
Hey, thank you. Now, I was looking at you earlier because we were talking so much, I wanted to give you a chance to talk. So I was feeling bad for you. Like, we're just talking.
Which is just fine.
And you're fine. Okay. All right.
But that, actually, what we were just talking about off break, I wanted to mention one aspect of that because it's interesting that we're talking about education and how that relates to all this and so on.
Yeah.
And it was actually when I first moved to the Twin Cities, and as an evolutionary biologist at the university, I got called in to help mediate or help advise people on a local school district where there had been a couple of creationists elected to the school board who were trying to stamp out evolution in the local schools. And the teachers were doing a very good job at fighting against this. Mm-hmm. Those teachers are all still there. Those school board members are not there. But it was at that time that my colleague Rusty Lowe and I got invited to Scott's
Cable show.
Yeah. Was it the Humanist show?
Humanist Views, yeah.
Yeah, and it was being done down in St. Anthony, Maine area.
The studio.
And that's where I first... I just remember I had just moved to Minnesota from Cambridge, Mass, and I was confronted with the concept of a local school having creations of school board, which to me, as living in Massachusetts, is like that's just unthinkable, absolutely unthinkable. And then we had the show, and we talked about standards and how science standards help to fight this kind of thing. And then we all went out to have a beer in the same building. There's a restaurant, there's a bar there. Well, and I realized this is the first time since I moved to Minnesota that I know that I'm sitting at a table with every single person here as an atheist. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was completely normal in the Harvard community in Cambridge. I mean, maybe there'd be someone here who was religious, but they're probably Unitarian, so it doesn't count. Mm-hmm. So my transformation to becoming an official, calling myself an atheist, was Scott was there for it. Like, I now have to call myself an atheist because I never had to before. I just was by default. And now I'm in a community where there are school boards forcing science out of science classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it still goes on.
We've actually kind of won the evolution fight more in Minnesota. It doesn't happen so much here anymore. No one can get away with it anymore. But now it's happening with climate change.
Yeah.
Now climate change is a thing that's under attack by religiously motivated people, mostly working through all the usual mechanisms in our education system and elsewhere.
Yeah. That's just – my mom was a teacher too, and I remember her saying – now, of course, this was at a time when the environment was not a political football. And kind of we were talking about before when this show had interviewed Paul Douglas and I had called in, and, you know, his religious affiliation is different. His climate change views are different than his political affiliation, which to me I'm like, well, then give up that political affiliation, Paul. I don't get it. But – you know, and he was just saying, well, you know, there's a lot of money involved with keeping this idea that climate change is a hoax. And I remember, like, there was a guy that I got my car fixed with, and I remember he had, like, just, I don't know, I don't want to say who he had. Well, he had Rush Limbaugh on, okay. And he was talking about, I said, why don't you think that there's such a thing as climate change? And, of course, I shouldn't have said that because he just went on and on about how it's a hoax. And it's like, I don't understand. I don't even remember what he said. It was so bizarre, and I don't know where this information is coming from. But I was like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. Where are you getting this information from? But he's convinced that this is just like total lies. And I said, well, what's wrong with like respecting where we live? I mean, what's wrong with that? I mean, I guess that's what I'm confused about. I don't understand where – I don't listen to those programs that he listens to. I probably could force myself and then
Scott
I could
does.
Become educated.
Do you have a perspective on this?
I do. And it,
where is this coming from?
As near as I can tell, it's – you know, they're buying into the stuff that on the right wing is one, not trusting science because, one, they don't quite understand totally what science is. They look at science as – facts I learned in the science classroom, like I learned facts about, you know, about how English language works or about that. And the scientists keep changing things on them and saying, well, we're gaining understanding because we're learning how to understand things better. So they're not looking at science as a tool that we humans use to figure out how the world works.
Yeah.
And that's what scares them, is because they want to look at it as a set of facts that doesn't change. You can go to it like you could the old encyclopedia and look at something up. Whereas, you know, they keep going, well, why do you have to keep revising them? Because we keep learning new things. We find new techniques to understand things.
Okay.
We find new techniques to understand how to take a look at ice cores, for instance, so we can look at how temperature has changed over time, because we understand how ice is composed. The same thing we do by looking at the layers of the rocks to understand how they were laid down. And they keep going, well, it's, you know, the Earth is only really 6,000 years old. It's like, yeah, you guys' understanding of geology is a little on the bad side. And not understanding how those observations go. They keep, when you talk to, like, you know, the evolution debate we've brought up, is they say there's now and you can't understand history to, you know, because there's historical science. It happened way back. Nobody was there. You weren't there to watch it happen. And they don't seem to understand that a lot of these things are such gradual processes. You know, we could then go down to a lake and say, let's watch the lake bottom, you know, the sediment grow in the lake bottom. And they said, it's sort of happening one little dusting at a time. Yes, that's how that process occurs. So it's going to take several decades for this lake to fill up, or this little pond to fill up and become a bog, as opposed to being a lake. And those are the concepts that, from what I can tell, they don't understand about science.
Yeah. Well, I was having this conversation with a conservative. I don't know. Are we not supposed to talk about religious affiliation?
We can a little bit. Just, you know, we just don't get into more specifics. But there, when it is, the political spectrum does make a difference.
I was talking to a right-wing-minded person. Can I say that?
Yes.
Is that okay?
You did.
I did already. Okay. And he's, and then you've heard this line before. I didn't, you know, have to hear me say it. But he was saying, well, I just don't feel that, you know, humans can have that much of an impact. And I said, what about water? When was the last time you could dip your cup into the lake and drink it in the river? I mean, ever since I was a kid, you couldn't do that. You'd think you'd be, you're crazy. You can't do that. You're going to poison yourself. So, I mean, obviously we've learned to live with our water being poisoned for a long time. Did that just happen? I mean, I thought that was human related. So obviously humans were able to accomplish that. So
the,
I don't.
The total amount of energy that we use burning fossil fuels every year is a double digit percentage equivalent of the total amount of energy that the Earth converts from sunlight using photosynthesis.
You might have repeat that again. That's a heavy
Just think about
statement.
The total amount of energy that the sun provides to our biological system through photosynthesis, just like as an amount.
Yeah.
Our burning of fossil fuels is equivalent to about a third of that every at any given in any given year.
Yeah. That's a
So that's
ton.
The effect humans have. It's a ton. It's like many tons.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a lot. That's a lot of energy, and I don't think people are going to grasp that, and why it's important for us to stop.
I mean, think
putting
about
the waste products of that into our environment.
That fossil fuel was originally plant matter, created from sunlight.
Okay.
Every year, we're using a third of what's there. How much of that plant matter is converted into fossil fuel every year? Fraction of a percent. So it takes millions and millions and millions of years to create enough energy for us to then spend a century or so burning it all off and converting it from physical solid matter into gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's
where it can then begin, eventually it can be converted all back into fossil fuel again over a period of 100 million years or so.
Yeah. There's books and they use the terminology of the burning up of using of ancient sunshine on that part. And
it's tens and hundreds of millions of years worth of ancient sunshine.
Yeah, and why we're not doing a good job of preserving that or stopping that and just using the sunshine straight. You're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be back after the break.
Hi, this is Mike Papantonio from Ring of Fire. Ring of Fire is a direct, smart, and I gotta promise you, a fearless progressive talk show. Join me, Mike Papantonio, and my co-hosts Bobby Kennedy Jr. and Sam Cedar as we take on the large corporate conglomerates and that radical right-wing media that dominate America's airwaves. Ring of Fire, Saturdays from 3 to 6 and Sundays from 6 to 9 p.m. on AM 950. It is the progressive voice of Minnesota.
I'm Matt McNeil here. It's the 2018 Blue State Ball set for Saturday, March 10th at the Blaisdell Mansion in Minneapolis. Coming back to the Twin Cities are Tom Hartman and Norman Goldman. We'll begin the evening with a VIP event starting at 5:30, and at 7 p.m., the general admission begins. We're expecting a ton of special political guests, and look for Mike McEntee and myself, too. VIP tickets are $100 each. General admission tickets are $35 each. Go to am950radio.com for ticket information. Saturday, March 10th at the Blaisdell, it's the 2018 Blue State Ball.
Saturdays at 1 p.m., you have a chance at a fresh start, a new beginning. Hi, everybody. This is Freddie Bell, host of New Beginnings. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, spirituality, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start. Join us Saturdays at 1 p.m. for New Beginnings with Freddie Bell on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Atheists, secular humanists, and free thinkers. Here you are listening to the Minnesota Atheists Talk Radio Show, Atheist Talk. We hope you are enjoying it. If having a frankly atheist perspective on the radio waves appeals to you, please consider making a contribution to our radio fund. Our contract came up for renewal, and we need your help if you want the program to stay on the air. That will make sure that you can continue to have opportunities to hear interesting speakers with non-religious perspectives, and you can call up and ask them questions too. Get the details on our website at minnesotaatheists.org, where you will find buttons to make it easy to make a secure donation through PayPal. Or, if you have a business and would like to reach an intelligent, progressive audience, please contact us through our website. That's minnesotaatheists.org. Or call us at 612-588-7031. If you are interested in us, we are interested in you.
Don't believe in God? Join the club. Humanists, atheists, and freethinkers have joined the American Humanist Association since 1941 to advocate for progressive values and equality for non-theists in America. Located in Washington, D.C., the American Humanist Association lobbies Congress on humanist issues, protects the rights of atheists in the courts, and supports more than 140 local chapters. Visit us at AmericanHumanist.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter to learn how you can join the club today.
With your AM950 weather, I'm Sam Turnberg. Today will be sunny with a high near 17, wind chill as low as minus 17. Tonight will be mostly cloudy during the early evening, and tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high near 12. Ambibulous is a brand new store selling only craft beer, wine, and spirits made in Minnesota. You can build your own 4 and 6 packs, which gives you a chance to taste them all. Ambibulous means one who enjoys alcoholic beverages of all sorts. So if that sounds like you, visit them at 949 Hennepin Avenue East or online at www.ambibulousmn.com.
Climate change is going on, and it's important that we get all communities talking about it and involved with trying to find the solutions. The religious community seems to be ignoring the issue and is hoping that it's a fraud of the that the right political field contends it to be, or a fact that will affect the entire planet. So we need to be working on that. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. If you have a question or a comment, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email at radio@atheist.org. I'm Scott Lohman. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from Minnesota Atheist and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise in this program, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and by the generous donations of our listeners. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our radio fund page. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 deductible or tax-deductible organization. Our music is composed by member Brent Michael Davids and is used with permission. Check the schedule for book clubs, discussion groups, pub crawls, movie nights, and other gatherings throughout the year, as well as sign up for meetups, listen to podcasts and previous programs, subscribe to Atheist Weekly email, and become a member, all at mnatheist.org. And now, back to our final segment in our discussion, and stay tuned for the Minnesota or for the American Atheists' viewpoint in the next segment.
I just want to mention, not much of a side trip, but just many people in the Minnesota Atheist community in particular know Sean Otto because he's given talks to the groups here. And he wrote a book called The War on Science, as current. And look for him out there now. He gives
the
talks.
War on Science.
And he has a framework that really does explain and helps to understand the transition from a society, Europe, controlled by religious authoritarianism, to one that involves initially the American Revolution and then other similar things, casting off the monarchies, mm-hmm. and separating church and state. and going towards different ways of constructing and how society works as being basically a function of the same process that brought science to the forefront as an important aspect of culture through people like Jefferson and Franklin and so on. Mm-hmm. It's just a very important read as to how this all works. There's a lot of it has to do with a lot of our questions can be understood by looking at the role of authoritarianism versus not in, in culture and society.
Okay.
Because science is not authoritarian. It can't be. But organized religion almost always has to be.
Well, because like you were saying earlier, is that there are fixed ideas that there are people that love those fixed ideas and weather can change and things can change and they don't like that it's changing, right? Or have no explanation for why it is or...
Or not understanding those processes and wanting society to be this way.
Yeah.
And one of our major cultural breaks from authoritarianism that has happened more recently, and I know Scott is an expert on, and I know you have something to say about, is science fiction.
Yeah, science fiction. Yes, we were talking earlier, the movie The Blob. And, you know, we were saying earlier, like, science fiction, it's the future. And so I was watching the movie, and then I was totally blown away, because at the end, now I hope I'm not spoiling this for anyone, because it's an old movie, people. So is at the very end, they're like, well, they sent the blob to the Arctic. And they said, well, as long as the Arctic stays cold, we'll be safe. And then I just got goosebumps and chills because I was like, oh, my God. Because that seems so ridiculous at the time that, of course, the Arctic is going to stay cold. That's what it does. But, of course, here we are. And if you want to believe it, I guess.
Well, we'll have to investigate. And I know exactly the guy to do it. David Kirtley should do this. What people might have been thinking at the time who wrote that. They might have had in their mind. Because climate change has been an issue for a long time.
Yeah.
And it might be. The blob is from the 60s, right?
Late '50s, early '60s.
Late '50s. So they may not have understood that that they might have been thinking saying the Arctic will always be cold is like saying hell will never freeze over.
Yeah.
Or they might not have been. I don't know.
Yeah. Are they still alive? Well, can we ask them?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the science fiction at the time, especially in the '50s when it was the heyday of the Cold War, was a lot of Cold War paranoia being put in there as aliens and others, which is why you see a lot of alien invasion movies, the paranoia of looking at the movies like in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where in there people are being replaced by pod people and looking like themselves but actually no longer behaving like themselves.
Or a communist would be.
Yeah. Or, you know, look at Godzilla, just to play with the classic monster movie here, is that was more of a fear of the atomic era.
Right.
Because in there it was an atomic test that wakes Godzilla up. So it's the fear of this big, uncontrollable, powerful thing on that. And, you know, those can translate a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of a few things right now in my mind. Now, I have to get this one joke in because they said, well, we only have so much more time left here because we've been having so much fun.
Because you are a comedian.
Because I am a comedian. I try to be. So some people might disagree with that. I don't believe that you are. But so when I hear Christians talk about, you know, that they're not concerned because they're going to go to heaven. And, you know, so this place is left to dust. You know, so what? They're not thinking of their grandchildren, apparently. But I was just thinking, like, okay, now when you rent, you know, you have to be responsible for the property that you live in. And basically, we're all renters. And if God is our landlord, then when you go to heaven, you're not going to get your deposit back. If you trash Earth, they're like, well, the last place you lived, it's like in disarray. And you want to come here to heaven? I don't think so. So I just something to think about. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, well, that's having the long view about the environment and our world, as we're only here for a little while, and then we hand it over to another generation.
Right.
And at this point, I always keep telling my son, I'm sorry, we need to apologize you because we're not leaving the world in better shape than when we acquired it, and you're going to have to work harder or you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. And to me, that just seems like common sense, or being a responsible human being. I mean, it's like when you're in a rental place, you don't trash the place and then expect to go get a lease somewhere else because they don't want to. And so just being responsible. So to me, it's just irresponsible to not consider that. So.
Well, when you have young kids these days in high school saying they don't plan on having any kids because they don't know what the future is going to be like for them.
Well, that's kind of why I didn't have kids, actually. And this was in the 70s because my mom didn't seem to have any good answers for what was going to happen in the future. So I understand. You were brave. You did.
Yeah.
You did have one.
Just
that's
the
good.
One.
Did you have any kids?
Two.
You have two? Okay.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. All right. So anyway, but that's a different show, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, those are all concerns where we're actually showing that we're thinking about that and understanding that, because there's always the disconnect between how a person looks at their own individual life versus then what everybody else does. Yeah. And to me, that I don't have that disconnect because I work in customer service, so I'm used to dealing with everybody else on that and trying to help answer questions and do that.
Right.
But getting out where it's like, well, we know that we need to take care of this part and we're just going to handle our little part of the world, not understanding that still those actions have permutations and will ripple out into the rest of our society.
Right.
And especially when that comes to the environment is that's the – when you try and when people talk about ownership and you talk about the river going through your property, that you can't look upon that river as it's yours because if for a time it is on your property.
Yeah.
But – the water going through is moving on elsewhere.
Yeah.
And if you can take that approach to the environment where I can't throw anything bad there because that's going to affect John down the street or in the next property over, that we can do that. But we don't always see a lot of that because people are keeping in mind their own issues of going forward.
Yeah. And we are supposed to be stewards. And even as I was researching these things, I mean, there are actually a lot of really, there are a lot of groups and organizations that do happen to be Christian. I'm not saying I'm a Christian. I'm just saying I was raised that way. You were raised that way. Were you raised that way too?
Yes.
And a lot of us were, but, you know, you could kind of see stuff that didn't make sense. And I could sense that with when we went to church when I was, my mom was an atheist. My grandma wasn't. My grandma took us to church. And, but I could sense that there was this kind of disconnect with, you know, like, just what was going on around us. And we also, where we lived, it was going to be proposed. We lived in the country, and it was going to be a landfill for Hennepin County. So a lot of the neighbors actually did grow together, merge together, and really get concentrating on – I'm thinking too much right now. So recycling. Okay, no one thought anybody would do it at the time. And now whenever I go to the recycling bin where I live, it's always full. I mean, I have to put bags next to it. So people can recycle. But I remember at the time, and this was in the late 70s, we were saying, well, how can we reduce our garbage? How can we reduce – and people at the time, like the people at the top would say, oh, people will never recycle. And they're doing it. So, I mean, I think that there's this – people don't have faith that if you present a problem, I think people can do it, but you can't just deny it and say it's not there because I don't because obviously it's not real, it's not reality.
There are a number of religious organizations that that have stewardship organizations, and there is a stewardship movement within the religious organization.
Yeah.
And actually, this is where we mentioned Paul Douglas several times.
Yeah.
And Paul is has wrote a book with a guy who's actually an Anglican bishop or Protestant bishop or something, and they talk about that and on stewardship. One thing that's interesting, though, is one group of these Anglican bishops or Protestant bishops has gotten together every couple of years for a conference to try to figure out how to transform the more or less Protestant fundamentalist religious community into one that is involved in stewardship. And they may have had some successes recently, but in the past, they often get together and they end up arguing about the Protestant equivalence of how many angels can actually dance on the head of a pin. I don't know what they do, but they argue and they fight and they get mad at each other and they go off in hissy fits and they don't ever do anything.
Yeah.
And that's been the history because to them, it's not the most important thing.
Yeah.
The most important thing is this other stuff they have with their religion. Meanwhile, I mean, I give talks on climate change to groups, and I talk to Rotaries, and I talk to other groups, and I talk to churches. And it's almost always a subset of religions that are – some Catholic churches, certain Lutheran churches, and, of course, all the Unitarians and so on are very much into this. So last time I went to talk to a church, it was in South Minneapolis, of course, and I wasn't sure how much pushback I would find. What I found instead was I heard a lot of great stories about how people's own personal experiences with their solar panels on their roofs and their, you know, engagement in this. And it was basically, I'm talking to the converted. I'm just giving them an update so they know the most current science.
Yeah.
No one's being convinced here. Everybody's on board.
Yeah.
There's many, many religious groups where everyone's on board fully.
So that's the good news. That is the good news about that.
Yeah.
You know, people would, but this idea that, oh, people aren't going to do it. They're not going to understand it.
Yeah. Well, this last time I was in a church for a family-related thing, and I heard the sermon. And the sermon was all about how it's okay. It was a relatively high-end community economically. It's okay to be wealthy and to not feel bad about it. Never mind this thing about the camel won't go through the head of the needle or whatever, the eye of the needle. There's a way to think about your wealth that makes it okay.
Yeah.
So that's also what religion can do, is it can make you
comfortable
comfortable with
your place in life.
Well, you can be wealthy and not be hurting people. You can. I mean, Paul McCartney is wealthy and he doesn't hurt people, does he? So
you know, it's all different approaches on that.
But I want to tell you about Paul McCartney's story.
Yep, we're coming up on just under a minute to go. So,
but now we have so much more to say. Now that the show's ending.
We always have that, but there are. Political organizations related with religion that are out to debunk the environmental movement. They call it attacking the green dragon. They worry about that. The Heartland Institute, which is basically funded by the fossil fuel thing, is run by an economist who likes to lecture us all on the climate on that. So, but anyway, we're out of time on that. So thank you, Lynette, and thank you, Greg. We've hope we've gotten a little bit of enlightenment out talking about our discussion on approach to the environment, because it does get just a little tricky on that, and it's complicated, and it's an ongoing conversation we need to keep having, because things are coming up on us, aren't they, Greg? I'd like to thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk. This show depends on the generous support of our members, our sponsors, and donors. Join us again next Sunday. Please consider supporting the show through the donation link at mnatheist.org. The podcast for the show will be on the radio page later today. Stay tuned for the American Atheist Viewpoint. This has been Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hey, it's Mike McEntee, and I have a show on AM 950 Monday through Friday from 4 to 5 o'clock. It's a free-form hour of news, interviews, and your phone calls. We don't do 10-second sound bites and yelling and screaming about issues. That may make for great entertainment, but it really doesn't help to solve the real problems we face. We try to get the whole story and have an intelligent discussion. We also occasionally have a little fun. Listen in from 4 to 5 o'clock on AM 950 Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Paul Metza inviting you to the 21st annual Holiday on Ice Cubes, a benefit for the Northeast Minneapolis Seniors Food Shelf. It features 15 great musicians and will be at Moe's Restaurant in Mounds View at 2400 County Road Highway 10 on Sunday, February 18th from 2 to 6 p.m. Bring a non-perishable food item and or a cash donation and enjoy over 15 musicians and a lovely afternoon of music for a good cause.
Hi, my name is Mickey McCabe. I'm the owner of Cucumbers Restaurant at 75th and France in Edina. Many who have dined at Cucumbers are of the opinion that our buffet has evolved from an older, more country-style buffet. They look at our 50-foot salad bar and can imagine a smaller ancestor with far fewer choices. An ancestor that didn't offer as many hot selections or have a bakery with fresh-baked muffins and breads. Didn't offer homemade soups and lacked the fresh fruit and ice cream bar that Cucumbers customers have grown to love. But some will say, where are the transitional buffets? In addition, they look at everything that we offer and say that Cucumbers is irreducibly complex. If you were to move just one of our offerings, the entire buffet wouldn't function. Well, I would like to think that Cucumbers was intelligently designed, since I helped design it. But at the same time, it truly is an evolutionary step up the buffet ladder. And as always, if you bring in your atheist newsletter or church bulletin, you will receive a $2 discount off the buffet price. Cucumbers, one heavenly buffet at 75th and France in Edina.
I've never met another atheist.
Sure you have. Non-believers make up 12% of the population.
Then where are they?
You can meet us at book clubs, pub crawls, discussion groups, movie nights, monthly meetings.
Okay, I get it. How am I going to keep track of all this?
Easy. Sign up for Minnesota Atheist Meetup Group and subscribe to AWE.
What's a meetup group?
Meetup is an online networking site that helps people build communities. We have over 700 members with at least two events every week.
And what is AWE?
It stands for Atheist Weekly Email. It comes out every Friday and lists everything that's going on.
How do I sign up?
Go to the Minnesota Atheists website, minnesotaatheists.org. On the left, click on the words Get Awe-Inspired.
And for the meetup?
Look for the red meetup badge on the right. Above it are the words, click here to check out the meetup group.
I'm sold. Minnesota Atheists, Meetup, and AWE. What's that website again?
MinnesotaAtheists.org.
Hello and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. This week I want to talk about an issue that sort of flies under the radar and is something that I don't think too many people are well aware of, and it's certainly something that I, even as an advocate and somebody who works in this area, wasn't super familiar with before I started digging into it a little bit more. And that's the issue of so-called religious freedom or religious refusal laws that affect adoption and foster care. In seven states across the country, there are laws that permit state-licensed child welfare agencies, and these are agencies that receive state taxpayer money, who are in charge of placing children in foster care or in adoption for a forever home. They are permitted to discriminate on the basis of their religious beliefs. And so what that means is that the adoption agencies are free to discriminate against potential parents and against potential foster parents and potential permanent parents, adoptive parents, on the basis of the religious beliefs of the organization, of the adoption agency. And so this typically takes the form of groups like Catholic Charities and a number of other ones. And to be clear, this oftentimes these are directives coming down from the leadership of the Catholic Church, or the leadership, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, just like when we're talking about healthcare. The frontline actual workers who are part of these groups often don't share these sort of discriminatory views, but it's sort of directives from on high that they follow that lead to this level of discrimination. So there are seven states, North Dakota, South Dakota, Michigan, Virginia, Texas, Mississippi, and Alabama, that have varying laws that in one capacity or another allow state-permitted and state-licensed child welfare agencies to refuse to place children, provide services to children and families on the basis of their own religious beliefs. So that includes LGBT people, that includes same-sex couples, that includes potentially people of different religious views, and they're allowed to deny placement on those bases. Only in eight states, plus the District of Columbia, are there laws that explicitly protect protect LGBT people specifically on the basis of either sexual orientation or gender identity, and prohibit discrimination in adoption services on those bases. The vast majority of states, 42 states, have no laws that address this issue. And it's important to note that federally, there are no protections for LGBT people. That's I think something that not everybody knows about, we tell people, these folks aren't protected federally. There are no federal statutes that protect LGBT people in workplace, in public accommodation, in housing, in adoption services, that this just isn't something that exists currently. And a lot of people are really surprised by that, but that is the case. There are no federal protections. And so there's a patchwork of protections that, are in certain states, but not in most others. And this is an issue that not only applies to the LGBT community, because they're sort of the primary targets of these things, and there's an obvious animus that goes along with that, and a lot of historical movement along that the target is obvious. But these are this applies to atheists as well. That if you put in for an adoption, and it's through a state licensed, state sponsored, state funded agency that happens to be part of a religious organization, they can deny you placement. They can deny providing a child to you, despite being well qualified and despite being otherwise, completely capable of adopting a child or fostering a child, and even in spite of any other factors. This is one of those issues that doesn't make as many headlines as something like the Masterpiece Cake case that was before the Supreme Court this last month. It doesn't make quite as many waves as something like North Carolina's HB2, the local preemption, and the so-called bathroom bill. These issues sort of fly under the radar and affect
many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of potential adoptive parents, but also children who are awaiting adoption. The numbers I've seen are that LGBT people adopt children at four times the rate of heterosexual couples, and also adopt children who are more difficult to place. So that would be older children, children with behavioral or developmental issues, and any number of other reasons that they're staying in the foster care system longer. LGBT people are, I believe it was six times more likely to adopt those sorts of children as part of the system. And children who age out of the system, that is, reach the age of 18 or whatever the age is in their particular state or municipality, without being adopted, tend to have much worse outcomes as far as education, employment, drug use, any number of metrics that you're able to look at to check on welfare and see how people are doing. They have higher teen pregnancy rates. They have higher instance of drug use and actually lower life expectancy. And so this is an issue that is something that the local groups that we're partnering with on any number of issues ranging from medically accurate sex ed to inclusive non-discrimination ordinances to church-state separation issues to minimizing religious exemptions. This is the sort of thing that, you know, is people look at and say, well, is this an atheist issue? Is this a church-state separation issue? The answer is unmistakably yes. That even though the animus here is primarily targeted at LGBT people, the way that finds expression is through quote-unquote religious accommodations or religious exemptions. And we have to be honest and clear about what those sorts of laws actually do. We have to engage with advocates who have stories to tell, who are part of this struggle and part of this community, and we have to work with legislators in all 50 states because, as I said, 42 different states do not have laws that specifically permit explicitly prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity, and seven states have laws that explicitly grant exemptions and grant the right for religious providers to discriminate. And that's seven too many. And so we need to do a better job of combating this and showing the harm that it causes. So that's something I just want to wanted to shine a light on and mention briefly. That's all the time I have for this week. Thank you so much for joining me. For more information about our work, or to become a member and register for our national convention, visit www.atheists.org. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next time.